Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
So before we get started, we'll check in on the thermometer. We are very behind this month. We've miraculously made it every month until now. We started in March, and I don't even have the munchies, so I don't know where that came from. And we're trying to raise $200,000 a month until the end of the year, and then I'm hoping that's it in terms of fundraising. We'll see. But right now, let's take a look at where we are. tyt.com/go, 65,921. And trying to get 200,000 with about 10 days left is going to be enormously difficult, but we'll do our best. Also, shout out to people who are doing a strike today for black rights. And so it's a wonderful program put together by a lot of the unions, so appreciate that they're doing that. And we participated in different ways today. We've got a ton of stories for you guys. Let's get started. Anna, let's start with the first story.
All right. Unfortunately, there's a bizarre story that has led to quite a bit of speculation for obvious reasons. So let me give you the details. The son of a federal judge has been murdered in his home by an individual who was dressed as a FedEx worker. Right now, it's unclear whether this individual actually works for FedEx, but authorities have taken identified a potential suspect who was found with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But the federal judge is Esther Salas, and not only was her son shot and killed as he opened the front door to their home, when her husband came to see what was happening behind him, he was also shot. Luckily, he survived and is in stable condition. Her husband is Mark, and her son was only 20 years old, Daniel. He unfortunately did not survive. So initial reports from law enforcement said that Daniel had opened the door with his father right behind him, and that's when the shooting happened. Authorities have not released any motive for the shooting yet, but here is what we know so far. On Thursday, Judge Esther Salas was actually assigned to handle a class action lawsuit that was brought against Deutsche Bank by Ali Karimi on behalf of investors who purchased securities from the bank between November 7th, 2017 and July 6th, 2020. The complaint alleges that the bank, quote, failed to properly monitor customers that the bank itself deemed to be high risk, including, among others, the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. That's according to federal court records. She also presided over other controversial cases involving high profile figures. She also handled the 2018 sentencing of Farrar Rowland, who was found guilty of federal racketeering charges and sentenced to 45 years in prison by Salas. Rowland was the leader of the Southside Cartel, one of Newark's most violent street gangs. So she had told friends and associates earlier that she was concerned that the work that she does might make her a target. Her husband is also a defense attorney, so that could play a role in what the potential motive was behind the shooting. But considering that the Epstein case is tied to this judge, many people are speculating that, you know, this is yet another strange occurrence tied to Epstein.
Okay, there is something incredibly strange going on. Deutsche Bank. That's where it is. And so, look, let me give context on this case and then context on Deutsche Bank. So in this shooting, the police say there was the guy who did the shooting, they claim, they think for now, is a guy who was involved in a case with the judge. And so you think, oh, okay. And the guy's very strange. He's an anti-feminist and he sues institutions all the time to get men's rights. He doesn't want happy hour for women, drinks, reduced drinks, etc. So very convenient that a guy who's a wacko had a case in front of this judge and killed himself after doing this shooting. That's so far the official story. That case was in 2015, and the judge ruled in his favor. So why on God's green earth 5 years later would he go to shoot a judge who ruled on his side? That makes no sense. That doesn't even make sense to a crazy person. So, okay, now we're told so far that it's a coincidence that she was just assigned the Deutsche Bank case last Thursday. I would be shocked more than I have ever been shocked in any news story if that is a coincidence. So let's get this right so far. Deutsche Bank has three different entities that are deeply controversial, accused of doing money laundering within the bank. There are Jeffrey Epstein, Russian oligarchs, and Donald Trump. Now, so far, Jeffrey Epstein apprehended the night that he committed suicide, which, by the way, no one outside of official government believes that he committed suicide. I challenge you to find 20% of voters, a Republican or Democrat or in the middle, who thinks Epstein committed suicide. It's preposterous. On the night that he committed suicide, the guards were magically not on their watch, and the videotape of the hallway is now missing. Oh, come on. So I don't know if you know this part, and this is so important. Two Deutsche Bank bankers that had access to that same area of Deutsche Bank, accused of money laundering, have committed suicide in the last couple of years. Okay, no, that's way too many suicides. Now the guy who theoretically shot at the judge has also committed suicide in a self-inflicted wound. No, there are no coincidences that large. They just aren't. I'm telling you right now, it's Deutsche Bank. I don't mean that it's the bank itself. And I don't pretend to know the inner details of who's doing this and exactly why they're doing it. But it is that portion of Deutsche Bank that has someone or some entity that is incredibly powerful that could turn off a videotape or make it disappear from a United States prison. And that is now looking to assassinate federal judges, potentially. Holy cow, this is not some outlandish conspiracy theory. Again, I can't emphasize enough. There are no coincidences that large. There just aren't. So there's something ridiculous going on in this country. We're about to enter lawlessness. This is what happened in Colombia when the drug wars are at their apex. And assassinations began and nobody ever figured them out. And anybody looking into them committed suicide. So it's happened in Russia before. Russia has done it outside their country before. So I don't know who's powerful enough to do this. But if we let them get away with killing a federal judge's son and trying to kill her and her husband, then we've got anarchy and we've become a total third world country. Do I trust William Barr to investigate this appropriately? Hell no. This is one of the reasons why I do have a more speculative theory on why this judge, why now. But if Trump wins re-election, I have no idea that he's involved, none at all. But it appears that what the folks are looking for here, other than a cover-up, is to delay. Why would you want to delay? In case Trump wins. If Trump wins, maybe we never, ever, ever find out what happened.
Jeez. I mean, look, I know that this story is not connected to Deutsche Bank or Jeffrey Epstein, but when you mentioned lawlessness, I immediately thought of what happened to Jamal Khashoggi and how there was absolutely no justice in that case either. I mean, there was indisputable evidence that you have the Saudi crown prince ordering the gruesome, brutal murder of a US resident and Washington Post journalist who went to Turkey and was murdered there, right? And you have the Trump administration trying to help the Saudis cover up for what they did. They dismembered the guy. They murdered him brutally. And what happened to that story? What happened to that case? Nothing, nothing. It's, I mean, and then you have stories about federal agents going in to various cities, Portland specifically, and, you know, terrorizing peaceful protesters for practicing their First Amendment rights. I mean, all of these stories, what are our lawmakers doing, right? Get off Twitter, get off Twitter. Their strongly worded letters and their nonsense on Twitter means nothing. The last thing we need right now is performative politics, but that's all we get. We get performative politics from every single lawmaker, every single one of them. And I'm tired of it. Okay, over the weekend there was a tweet about like, oh, isn't it fascinating how senators will tweet something like, oh, someone should really do something about what's going on in the country right now. Yeah, you're one of 100 people in the Senate who can actually push to do the right thing and get something done, but they don't do anything. You know, the performative politics, the Twitter nonsense, that's all we can rely on when it comes to our elected leaders. And it's devastating because I feel like this country in a lot of ways is already too far gone. How many things has the Trump administration gotten away with? I mean, William Barr completely misrepresenting the obstruction of justice that was perfectly and in a very detailed way outlined in the Mueller report. What happened to that? What did our lawmakers do about that? Nothing. So nothing's gonna happen with this. Nothing.
No.
There will be no justice in this story. I guarantee it. I guarantee it.
We can't.
I guarantee it.
We can't have nothing happen in this case. If now intimidating or killing federal judges is part of a political strategy, we're done for. Then we have total chaos and lawlessness. And this country will devolve so quick.
We're there. Yeah. We're already there.
All right. So, anyway, look, guys. I want to be clear. This is not about the lawlessness. Is about the election. This particular shooting is not about Trump versus Biden in any way, shape, or form. Like when I say, yeah, Trump had his money in that portion of Deutsche Bank, but I would be equally shocked if Trump knew about anything going on in regards to these suicides, et cetera. Now, why would I be shocked after I told you, wait, he often works with Russian oligarchs, they all have their money in this part of the bank, and hence the same people that dealt with it. That's why the portion of the bank is relevant. And apparently some people who are willing, clearly based on the fines that have already been paid, break the law on behalf of these powerful people. And Trump's also connected to Epstein. He went to his parties or was friends with him, et cetera. If Trump was involved in the details of any of this, there's no way that he could stop himself from talking about it because he's a class A moron. And no one would ever tell him because they'd know that he would blab about it. He'd say, well, you know, nobody's better at murder than I am. So, I mean, that's why I'd be really surprised if Trump knew anything about this. It's in that sense, it's not political. For God's sake, we got to figure out who's trying to kill a federal judge. Last thing on this. So why bother? Because this case is going to go on. You can't kill, you know, 2, 5, 10, 20 judges in a row. At some point, the case is going to continue. So why would you bother doing this now? Well, and by the way, on all the other cases she worked on that the press is, I get it. I know why they're mentioning it. It's irrelevant information, but it ain't those cases either. So there's a big giant drug dealer that she prosecuted. That was 4 years ago. Why now? Right after she gets assigned Deutsche Bank, right? They're like, oh, she did the Real Housewives of New Jersey. The Real Housewives of New Jersey ain't assassinating any federal judge, okay? So that's not what's happening. It might be drama there, but there isn't that much drama. So the timing is interesting because the only possible thing you can gain from shooting at a judge or a family is to delay what is coming in that courtroom. And the only reason you'd want to delay is because there's an election 4 months from now. So in that sense, it's connected. Whoever it is that's doing it, and again, I'd be really surprised if Trump had any information about it. But whoever's doing it, apparently, my best guess, and this is the part I said is speculative, it just wants to delay that trial from going forward. not necessarily end it, but delay it. I'm sure they'd love to end it. That's much more difficult. So, you know, this is where I would say the Justice Department should have every person assigned to this that they could possibly have assigned. On the other hand, the Justice Department is busy in Portland breaking the law over there and not actually doing their job. And it's William Barr that's the head of the Justice Department. I don't trust them to do any investigation, let alone this one. So we might not find out what happened. Anna's right, maybe ever. But if we do, it easily could be 6 months, a year, or longer before we find out. So. But yep. Do not forget this case. This case is super important.
Well, since you mentioned Portland, why don't we talk about that story next?
You know, if you look at what's gone on in Portland, those are anarchists, and we've taken a very tough stand. If we didn't take a stand in Portland, you know, we've arrested many of these leaders. If we didn't take that stand right now, you would have a problem like, you know, they were going to lose Portland.
Well, that was Donald Trump taking ownership of the fact that federal agents have been cracking down on peaceful protesters in Portland, Oregon. These are individuals who have been completely intimidated, terrorized, haven't been told what they've been charged with. As federal agents who are not in marked cars, who are not identifying who they are, who are not even telling the people they're detaining why they're being detained. You know, they've been sent there by the Trump administration in an effort to scare protesters and prevent them from going out there and doing what they're supposed to be allowed to do based on their constitutional rights. Now, in a tweet, Trump also claimed that his administration is supposedly helping Portland, not trying to hurt Portland. And the acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf also blasted the protesters as lawless anarchists. Now, again, if someone is caught doing something illegal during these protests, it wouldn't be so difficult to tell them what they're being arrested for, tell them what they're being detained for. But again, to just reiterate, these are federal agents who are not even identifying who they are as they take protesters and toss them into unmarked vehicles. And if you don't believe me, there are multiple videos showing it, including this one.
What are you doing? Use your words, what are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing?
I haven't done anything wrong.
Use your words. What is going on?
We need to know.
Who are you?
Why are you taking
NLG will get you out. What's your name? Tell us your name.
What's your name?
Okay, you're fine. We'll get you out.
Bro, what?
All right. We got you, friend.
We got you. NLG.
You just violated their rights.
Kidnapping people.
You just violated their rights.
Thanks for keeping them.
No. How are we supposed to know who you are? How are we supposed to know you're not kidnapping us and you're civilians kidnapping us?
Now, these federal agents are not trained to deal with peaceful protesters. They're trained to deal with rioters, with people who they expect to have violent confrontations with. So these are individuals who aren't there for crowd control and to make sure everyone's safe. They're, again, involved in these, you know, in these protests with the sole purpose to intimidate them. And again, they're detaining people with no probable cause and they're not letting the protesters know what they're being detained for. They're even using violence against peaceful protesters, including this next video where you will see a veteran, okay, who wanted to see what was going on. He showed up to the protest and unfortunately got caught up in the middle of the violence. Take a look. Yeah, there's a, you know, older gentleman, a veteran. You can see that he's not causing any problems there and he's met with violence by these federal agents. And this should be unsurprising considering the fact that Donald Trump earlier had signed an executive order indicating that he would crack down on any area of the country where monuments or statues are being targeted. And so this is the result of that. And don't worry, if you're concerned about this and you're worried about constitutional rights being trampled upon, you have Democrats who are in the process of writing their strongly worded letters. I'm sure the Trump administration and the Justice Department will take those strongly worded letters seriously and do something about the fact that our democracy is being dismantled every single day by the Trump administration and the inaction by Congress.
So that veteran that you saw standing there, he said he'd never gotten to a protest before. He said the idea that all the people out there were anarchists was absurd. And he just wanted to see what was going on because he heard the kids were getting tear gassed. There is a quote, wall of moms who linked arms to protect some have sons there and daughters. But others are just moms who are concerned to protect the protesters. And he thought, well, I mean, that's interesting. Why are they out there? So let me go check it out. And when he realized that they were tear gassing everybody, including the moms, he went up to the officers or whoever they are in those fatigues and said, look, I'm a veteran. Remember your oath to the Constitution. And that's when they started wailing on him with batons. By the way, they broke his hand. He's a wonderful guy who was unmoved, and people were impressed that he was unmoved when they were assaulting him. But that was a very serious assault. His hand is broken in two different parts. And so that's what they're doing to our veterans. That's what they're doing to our moms. Who are they? And never quite clear when they come out in the fatigues. They have said they are not putting the names of any of the officers involved because they say, oh, we're worried about doxing. No, that's secret police. And so every fascist government takes the names of the officers off their uniforms when they're sending them out to do something nefarious. It's an obvious violation of our core principles of democracy. Both the mayor and the governor are saying, we don't want you here. This is dangerous. You've created a situation that is far more dangerous for our civilians than before you came. And now it's six nights in a row of tear gas. Tear gas is legally not allowed according to court decisions in Oregon. You're doing it anyway. And on top of that, you might get into a conflict with our local police. And then we would have a total nightmare on our hands. We already have a total nightmare. So every part of this is wrong. The attorney general in Oregon, Ellen Rosenblum, is suing the DHS, Marshal Services, saying that you're not giving people a reason for why you are arresting them. That is illegal and unconstitutional. You must have either a warrant or probable cause. You don't appear to have either, and you never state your probable cause. So you're not following any of the laws that we have in Oregon or at the federal level. So if you don't follow the laws and you don't give people their rights and you don't tell them why you arrested them, well, what you're doing is a kidnapping. And so that's what's happening in Portland by federal forces.
Yeah, the Trump administration has become way worse than anyone could have ever predicted. And you know, all of these right wingers who have incessantly whined and cried about their First Amendment rights being violated on social media platforms are also encouraging the kind of unconstitutional behavior we're seeing in Portland and toward protesters throughout this country. This is what we're seeing in real time. Again, the dismantling of what was supposed to make America such a great democracy. You don't have a democracy when federal agents come in and start snatching people up and detaining them with absolutely no charges and no probable cause. We have to take a break. Go ahead, Cenk.
If Biden wins and we regain the stability of democracy, people will have no idea how close we came to fascism and how close we came to losing this country. It's not at all a hyperbole. But on that note, of if we're going to be able to retain our democracy through this election, one of our members just emailed in or sent a message, and I Am Sock says, pepperballing and tear gassing a group of peaceful moms might have some ramification in Cenk's Iowa suburbs mom voting block. So that's a voting block I often talk about where they're just going to rebel and say, okay, no, enough's enough, right? Well, guess what? They've already done that. Trump won suburbs by over 10 points against Hillary Clinton. He's now losing them in a range of polls between 9 and 25 points, the suburban vote. That is shocking. Obama, in a really significant victory in 2008, barely won the suburbs by 2 points. Now in some polls, Trump is losing the suburbs by 25 points as a Republican. That is unheard of. So if things hold, this will be a complete landslide. That is part of my reason for overall optimism. But what's happening in the streets right now is super dark. And I'll end it on this. It's a quote from Trump on this. He says, "We're trying to help Portland and not hurt it. Their leadership has for months lost control of the anarchists and agitators. They are missing in action. We must protect federal property." And then this is in all caps. "And our people." These are not merely protesters. These are the real deal. I don't know what he means by the real deal and what the hell that stands for. But I do know what "our people" means in all caps. It means, you know, these Black Lives Matter protesters and these left-wing protesters, they're not our people. It's time to protect our people. So that is not heavily coded at all. And that's Donald Trump's strategy here in this election. Racism and mixed with fascism. And again, it's not hyperbole. You're seeing it unfold in Portland right now, right in front of our eyes. And it's not just a bunch of left-wing commentators online that are saying it. It's the mayor of Portland. It's the governor as attorney general of Oregon. This is real and it's happening right now.
When we come back from the break, we'll give you an update on what's happening with coronavirus, including Trump cutting funding for testing and also urging Republicans to avoid voting for the right type of stimulus bill. We'll be right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All right, we are back on the Young Turks. So I want to tell you guys about our sponsor, of course. That's aspiration.com/TYT. Look, guys, support as much progressive organizations as you can. And money is everything. So if you've got your money in a place that sends it to fossil fuel and other dirty places, it's not good for peace of mind. So they take care of your money. They also plant 10 trees for every sign up. So aspiration.com/TYT. Okay, let me go to the members' comments. $500 Bellagio chip writes in. That's a reference to a Mark Thompson story. I'm so happy today. Today I got my Heather hoodie and my No Justice, No Peace mask, and I can't wait to wear them. That's awesome. Thank you. ShopTYT.com for those. That's my favorite one. My No Justice, No Peace mask. That's the one I wear most often. Bouchaw24 says, "Anna's back. She's my favorite host by far. Ready for a good show, TYT fam." Gabby Morita says something that I want to make sure that is clear. My position is clear. She says, if Deutsche Bank is indeed behind the shooting of Judge Salas's family, their executives need to be held criminally liable. We can't let them get away with actual murder, let alone financial murder. I want to be clear. I would be very surprised if anybody at Deutsche Bank was involved. When I say Deutsche Bank, I mean that portion of Deutsche Bank, meaning that likely one of their clients, one of their criminal clients, is the one that might be behind a lot of these so-called suicides and shootings. Banking executives generally do not order hit jobs. And in fact, two of the people that theoretically committed suicide were bankers. So they might be the targets rather than the perpetrators. We don't know who the perpetrators are, so let's just leave it at that. Monkey Mom 14 says, on my optimism, Cenk, I admire your hope, but Anna's right, we're already there. Sina Hugaboom says, Anna, I love you. I want to give you a hug. Our members are absolutely wonderful to us. I appreciate it. Last couple of ones here from YouTube Super Chat. Ibrahim Ferrier says, I don't have much to spare right now, but people need you and your people's voices. Thank you, Ibrahim. I appreciate it. I saw you in one of the YouTube live videos that I was doing as well. I can see all the YouTube channel members when I'm doing live videos. I see all your badges and all your names. You could become a YouTube channel member of the Young Turks by hitting the join button below if you're watching on YouTube. And finally, Christopher Mailpores writes in, Joy Reid debuts her show tonight interviewing Hillary Rodham Clinton. I feel like this is part of the Ghostbusters where the Keymaster meets the Gatekeeper and they made to open the gates of hell, but those are already opened. Press on. So press on is our campaign here at tyt.com/go. Thank you for donating, whether you're doing it through that or YouTube Super Chat. But yes, non-surprising that Joy Reid's first guest would be Hillary Clinton. She's the only person on the network more hostile to progressives than even Chris Matthews was. So nice job improving it. Okay, Anna, you're up.
Yep. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to do this, but now that it's been reported, it's out, an official statement has been released. I do want to address it on this show because he was a really important person in my life, a really good friend. And a lot of people have been messaging about it and wondering what's been going on. So, Michael Brooks has passed away unexpectedly. For those of you who knew him, I hosted a show with him on Jacobin. He was an incredibly important person in my life. He's been on The Young Turks. And I want to just read you the official statement that's been released by his friends and family members. It's with a very heavy heart that we announce the unexpected passing of Michael Brooks, a son, brother, friend, and true comrade to so many, due to a sudden medical condition. I'm sorry, I can't read through it. It's posted on Twitter. If you guys want to read the entirety of it, please do. I'm beyond heartbroken today, and it's really hard to accept that he's gone. He was such a good person, such a good friend, and I already miss him so much. And I feel a great deal of loss today. So,
yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So Michael Brooks had his own show. He also was part of Majority Report with Sam Cedar. He's been on the Young Turks many times before. In fact, we were just having conversations about 10 days ago about having him on more and more. Anna and I were talking about that, including, and our others at the company were. He was a great guy. Everybody who'd ever met him thought he was incredibly warm and funny and personable and a wonderful, decent human being. And he was also incredibly smart, knew foreign policy inside and out. I would have taken his knowledge against any sitting United States senator or congressman by a mile. And he was a force for good. So, here's my personal take on it. Look, our society's a little sick, And so we judge people based on so-called success. And what are our metrics for success? How rich you are. That's number one by a landslide. And I don't know Michael's personal finances, but I doubt he was rich. So society would not have declared him a success in that sense. Then people judge based on status. What's your position? What's your power, et cetera? And I don't know that Michael had much of that either. But I do know Michael touched millions of people's lives, and he probably changed thousands of lives. That's definitely a hell of a thing. That's a hell of a thing. And that is a better metric for success than any status or power or privilege or wealth that the rest of society values so much. I value what Michael did. I value that he was always reasonable and logical, always decent and fought for the right things, always held the powerful accountable, and stood up for the powerless. To me, that is a life well lived. And for all the good that you did in the world, Michael, we'll love you forever. And
Michael played a huge role in just my political evolution. There are very few people in this world that encourage you and inspire you to be a better person. People who spark your curiosity, who challenge you in the best ways. And that's who Michael was for me. In addition to an incredibly loyal and loving friend, he was just such an understanding, compassionate person. And on my, most difficult days, he always knew exactly what to say to make me feel like it was going to be okay. And I can't describe at all how much loss I feel. And it's not just me, it's so many people who are having difficulty, processing this today. But he was someone who just, again, made me want to be a better person and who inspired me to learn more, to challenge myself, to step out of my comfort zone. And I already miss him, and I'm going to continue to miss him. And I just can't believe that this is what's happening. Feel like I'm in a nightmare right now.
I'm going to say one last thing, guys. Here's another problem with our society. We're too damn negative. I know we're in the middle of really tough times where there are real bad guys in the world, but everything is nonstop attacks, 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 criticism, criticism. And, the media is unfortunately the number one culprit. And in a lot of ways, that includes us as well. And so if Michael had done something, quote unquote, wrong, people would have written articles about it. They would have gone nuts over it. In fact, they did it to his co-host, Sam Cedar, when Sam actually hadn't said anything wrong, and they tried to get him canceled from MSNBC. This was a couple of years back now. So if Michael had done something wrong, which he didn't, you would have heard about it nonstop. But all the wonderful, great things that Michael did you hear about it? I mean, some of you are progressive, so yes, you did, and you mourn his loss with us. But for non-progressives, the media never covers, and this just happens to be about progressives, but I'm making a broader point. We almost never celebrate the positives. So all that's left is negativity and just this toxic culture where we're nonstop ripping each other apart and nonstop judging one another. One of the things I feel like is we didn't get to celebrate Michael's life. I mean, obviously his passing is so abrupt and unexpected, and he was so young, but I'm just asking you guys as one human being to another, celebrate each other while you're still here. So I'll be cliched, I don't care. Hug your loved ones a little tighter and make sure that you say positive things about the people in your life and make sure you know how much they're valued by you while they're still here. We love you, Michael, and we'll always love you. Let's take a break. We'll come back and try to carry on.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your Active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you. Just read member comments and then we'll try to do more news. Badger Gal says, oh no, I'm so sorry to hear about Michael Brooks. I know that he'll be fighting for us on the other side. Thank you, Michael. Be blessed. Progressive Pirate, oh my God, Michael Brooks, what a loss. He was one of the smartest guys on the internet. Rest in peace, friend. Francis, Michael Brooks' YouTube channel is one of the reasons I got into Lefty News. So sad. Michelle, Anna, I'm so sorry. I love watching you and Michael together. He will be missed. And Trumpty Dumpty had a great fall. Says, why do we always lose the wonderful, caring people far too soon? Yet the evildoers seem to stick around way too long. Rest in peace, Michael Brooks. Hear, hear. All right. Anna.
All right. I think we're going to be very good with the coronavirus. I think that at some point that's going to sort of just disappear, I hope. I'll be right eventually. I will be right eventually. You know, I said it's going to disappear. I'll say it again.
But does
it's
that
going to disappear.
Does that discredit
and
you?
I'll be right. I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. You know why it doesn't discredit? Because I've been right probably more than anybody else.
And as we all know, of course, Donald Trump has not been right about pretty much anything, especially when it comes to the decisions he's made in response to coronavirus. He continued to lie about the pandemic and its severity during an interview with Chris Wallace on Fox News. He claimed that we're actually doing better than any other country. And the reason why it appears that we have such high coronavirus numbers is because we dominate when it comes to testing. He continued those lies in this next clip. Take a listen.
When you talk about mortality rates, I think it's the opposite. I think we have one of the lowest mortality
rates
in the world.
We're going to take a look. We had 900 deaths on a single day.
We will take a look.
This week.
Ready?
You can check it out.
Could you please get me the mortality rate?
Yeah.
Kaylee's right here. I heard we had one of the lowest, maybe the lowest mortality rate anywhere in the world. Do you have the numbers, please? Because I heard we had the best mortality rate.
The case rate of similarly situated countries, as Dr. Burks points out, and this is
Number one low mortality rate. I hope you show the scenario because it shows what fake news is all about.
Okay, go ahead. Think I'm fake news, but okay. We'll put our stats on.
You said we had the worst mortality rate in the world,
I
and we
said
have
you
the
had
best.
The
all right, it's a little complicated, rate. But bear with us. We went with numbers from Johns Hopkins University, which charted the mortality rate for 20 countries hit by the virus. The U.S. ranked 7th, better than the United Kingdom, but worse than Brazil and Russia. The White House went with this chart from the European CDC, which shows Italy and Spain doing worse, but countries like Brazil and South Korea doing better. Other countries doing better, like Russia, aren't included in the White House chart.
And when it comes to testing, while Donald Trump is touting testing here in the United States, we all remember what it was like to have shortages of testing. We all remember what it was like for the Trump administration to refuse taking tests from the World Health Organization early on in the pandemic. And now we're learning that the administration is also trying to block $25 billion that GOP, that means Republican senators, want to allocate for the CDC and billions more for the Pentagon and State Department to address the pandemic at home and abroad. The administration is also seeking to zero out $10 billion in new funding for the CDC in the upcoming bill while slashing spending for the Pentagon and State Department related to foreign aid. I bring these numbers up because he wants to literally cut funding toward testing. because he sees testing as a huge problem. In his mind, more tests means that we're actually knowledgeable about how many Americans actually have this virus, and he doesn't want that. He thinks it makes him look bad. So he is going against Republican lawmakers and urging them to essentially cut funding for the CDC and for coronavirus testing.
First of all, on his absurd claim that it'll disappear, there is such a thing as herd immunity, and at some point the numbers dramatically drop in the number of cases and deaths, as happened in New York. But that does not mean that it magically disappears. And what it does is it gives people a sense of false hope and security and confidence. Then they go out there without masks and it rises instead of dropping. So yes, at some point, we hope that the world is rid of this plague. But whether it's 6 months from now or 6 years from now, Trump can't then say, oh, well, after hundreds of thousands of unnecessary deaths, it eventually went away. I was right. No, you are not right. You're not remotely right. Even in their own chart, which excludes most of the countries, he says, see, we're the best. And in their own chart, they're not the best. He just has no connection to reality or the truth at all. He's constitutionally incapable of telling the truth. The reality is, as Chris Wallace pointed out, we're the seventh worst in mortality rates. And you can't fake that, because that's not people getting a disease. It's not data on whether people were tested too much or not. It is dead people. So there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Now, in terms of the cuts, it is so maniacal what Trump administration is suggesting, that it's almost as if they're trying to get the maximum number of Americans killed. I mean, if you were doing a plan to maximize the deaths, this would be the plan. So if it's done by accident, then that's, and I would imagine it's done by accident. I would hope it's done by accident. It would unfortunately prove my point that he is the single most incompetent leader we have ever had in any political office in the history of the United States. Who cuts funding for disease control in the middle of a pandemic? Who zeroes out the request for that funding? Who takes away funding from all of the different organizations fighting it within the federal government, including the Pentagon? Now, the reason why I say the Pentagon is not because they're the most directly related to fighting this disease. CDC is, and all the other places that Trump cut. But a Republican cutting the Pentagon budget to make sure that they cannot fight the virus, that almost seems willful and on purpose. If it's not on purpose, what are you doing? That doesn't even make any political sense, even by the most outlandish right-wing ideology. That's why even Republican, hardcore right-wing Republican senators are like, you're doing what? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? So the worse the disease gets, the more the economy is hurt. So there's no winners at all. The only thing I could possibly imagine is our enemies that want to rip us apart and have us inflict as much damage as possible in this country. I literally can't think of any other motivation for cutting every part of the budget that affects actually fighting this disease in the middle of not only a pandemic, but us being having the most cases and most deaths in the world in that pandemic. Unreal.
Let's take a look at more of what Trump had to say during his interview with Chris Wallace.
We go out into parking lots and everything. Everybody gets a test. We find if we did half the testing, with all of that being said, I'm glad we did it. This is the right way to do it. I'm glad we did what we're doing. But we have more tests by far than any country in the world.
But, sir, testing is up 37%.
Well, that's good.
I understand. Cases are up 194%. It isn't just that testing has gone up. It's that the virus has spread. The positivity rate has increased. There,
many
the
of
virus
those
is
cases,
worse than it was.
Many of those cases are young people that would heal in a day. They have the sniffles and we put it down as a test. Many of them, don't forget, I guess it's like 99.7%. People are going to get better. And in many cases, they're going to get better very quickly.
That is not the case. There is such a significant uptick in the number of people who are dying from coronavirus that California is now looking to shut down again for the second time. Florida has experienced its deadliest day since the pandemic started. Hospitals are at capacity around the country. There are new shortages of coronavirus tests, and there are shortages of personal protective equipment at many of the hospitals that are treating patients with coronavirus. In late May, there were fewer than 20,000 new cases of coronavirus reported each day. On Friday of last week, that number shot up to 76,000 people. 76,000 new cases of coronavirus in one day, in one day. And that is on Donald Trump, who is fighting to cut funding for the CDC for testing and for what we need in order to fight this pandemic effectively. That's what we're dealing with right now.
So in late May, the number of cases we had at the national level here was around 20,000. We were similar to Europe's numbers. Since then, Europe's numbers have gone down to about 6,000 cases a day. Our numbers have gone up to 76,000 cases. So we have been maniacally incompetent in dealing with this. And he says, in most cases, it's just the sniffles. Well, in 140,000 cases, it wasn't the sniffles, they died. And if you think it's so unimportant and not a big deal and all you get is the sniffles, why do you get tested three times a day? You know, now there's a story out about how the NBA might be wasting too many tests on their players. Well, we're wasting a lot of tests on Donald Trump, three a day at a minimum, when the guy thinks it's no big deal, it's just the sniffles. Go for it, big guy. Go work at a meatpacking plant without a mask right next to everyone else and find out if it's the sniffles or not. So all those families with people who died in them, and this guy's going around minimizing your pain and your loss while getting new people killed. The cutting of those budgets is unconscionable and totally inexplicable. I've never seen a leader this bad ever in my life. All right, we have so much more on the post game. TYT.com/join or the join button below. We'll see you there in a minute.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.